looking at the portraits of Jesus, very fast-moving portraits, very short-to-the-point portraits of Jesus that Mark gives to us. And the previous encounter we had with the Lord was watching him deal with this demonized man and mercifully, powerfully show his victory over all those demons, as you can see the authority that Jesus has. And yet he was so profound, people that feared, man, getting too close to Jesus, I might lose something. They sent him away. We don't want you here. Go away. And of course, Jesus won't stay where he's not wanted. And that's true even today. Now, if you don't want to surrender to the Lord, he's not going to chase you down the street. However, he is merciful and he is patient. He knows you might be stubborn now, but you know, open later. And so he's going to let you go for now, and you might find what life is all about and have to discover some things before you come back and realize, okay, Lord, I need you. I know that now. Well, in this next passage, we see two encounters with Jesus. And these two encounters, to me, are very interesting, how Mark weaves them together. He shows us how they fit together, because there is both a very, very religious man who, out of desperation, humbles himself to see Jesus for help. And then you have a woman who's more or less an outcast who has to muster up enough strength to get out there and press through the crowd to touch him. Two very desperate people with their desperate situation in need who express faith in Jesus that he can help them. However, in both cases, it's kind of an imperfect faith, that which is true for all of us in some degree, where the Lord has to strengthen. And in a sense, we gather together, we're in his word, we worship him. In many ways, we're learning about him and we're learning to trust him more. Some of us perhaps are not. Some of us have probably pretty much plateaued, and we've gotten a little thick and stale in our experience, and we need to be jolted into a deeper walk with him. And others perhaps need to be encouraged. Take that step of faith. The Lord will help you. Some have gotten comfortable in their Christianity, and you know, they've got the pretty much carved out for themselves an existence that is substandard in their walk, but it's okay. They're okay with it, they think, until they're desperate, and then they need something deeper. And others, you need that encouragement. So let's take a look at how these, what I would call desperate faith, meets Jesus. And in fact, there's kind of a desperate intersection between these two people. Verse 21. Now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, that is, they sent him away from the Gadarenes. Now he's back in the area of Capernaum, most likely. He's back there. A great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. If you're in that region of the Galilee, when you're by the sea, everything goes up. So when you go up to Capernaum, you have to walk up a pretty steep area. And it says that, behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet. Now this is an interesting encounter, because Jairus, being the ruler of the synagogue, remember this was the synagogue that already confronted Jesus about him healing on the Sabbath. They've already been offended at Jesus. He doesn't seem to be following their traditions. He is doing things that are a little bit different than they're used to. He's not per se violating the law, but certainly they think he is, because they're so steeped in their traditions, they don't know the difference between what their man-made traditions are and what the actual Bible says. There are a lot of people in that position. They don't know the difference sometimes. And so they're just offended at him. So this guy now coming and humbling himself, falling at his feet, what is going on with this? Why would he do this? Well, we're told in the next verse. He begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come lay hands on her that she may be healed and she will live." We're told later that she was 12 years of age, and he's desperate over his 12-year-old daughter, and I can only imagine being a father. You know, that daughter now just coming into womanhood, that 12 years of age in the Jewish culture, when a young lady reached 12, she was considered a woman. It was 13 for the men. They're a little slower. But here's this 12, you know, I just picture, you know what? Little daughters are just the most precious things in the world. They're daddy's girls. They are just the chatty little ones that just run and throw themselves with abandon in your arms and say daddy in their cute little locks. And just, I mean, what's not to love about little girls? And I just picture the relationship that he has. Here he is, a prominent figure in the community, but look, there's nothing like your little baby girl. And it doesn't matter how old she gets, she's still your little baby girl. Even when she has babies, she's still your little baby girl. And I'm not going to embarrass my little baby girl who's sitting right over there, because she'll get mad at me, but I could totally relate with this. So whatever he thought about Jesus before, you learn something. He did believe Jesus had power, because he wouldn't be there. To actually humble himself, embarrass himself in a sense, to come and, yeah, I know I wasn't treating you very well before, Jesus, but now, you know, I'm desperate. And he humbles himself, and he probably never would have had he not been desperate. And sometimes the Lord, in his love for us, allows us to be in those positions where we're totally, unless the Lord comes through, we're toast. We need his help. So being desperate, it makes people a little bold. No matter how rich or poor you are, you know, it's an amazing thing. Life can smack you in the face. And here he's very prominent. He's probably fairly well off and yet vulnerable to life happening. And in this case, his little 12-year-old daughter at death's door. It doesn't say much about any conversation that took place. He just says the story, and it says Jesus just went with him. I mean, we don't know what conversation, if any, happened. And I get the feeling like Isaiah 65, verse 24 says, it'll come to pass that before they call, I will answer. And while they're still speaking, I will hear. And Jesus just responds. Now, I can only imagine someone thinking, maybe someone's thinking, you know, maybe the disciples are thinking this, Jesus, you know, you're going to go with him after what he did to you? You know, make him beg. You know, of course, he's already begging at this point. Or at least get an apology from him. But Jesus, you know what? Listen, small minds think that way. Small minds hold petty grudges and unforgiveness and bitterness in their heart. Small people do that. That's not for the believer. Listen, if you're holding unforgiveness or bitterness in your heart towards somebody that did this to you, or they said that about you, or they hurt your feelings, or they broke you off as friends, or they turned your other friends on you, you can go on and on with a whole litany of things that people can do to you. And if you're sitting there just boiling in your bitterness, I'll tell you something. You have not met my Jesus. I don't care what religion you think you have, you have not met my Jesus. Look at Jesus and how he is in this passage, and you will be confronted with the smallness of that response, because you see his great heart here. And you know, Jairus knows Jesus well enough to believe he has power. And now maybe the honesty of his assessment has to come public, because there's a lot of people that may, in front of others, mock Christianity, mock you, laugh about you, what you believe in. But you know, the interesting thing is, when they get desperate, they might just know you're the one to go to. In fact, I did that. I was one of those mockers. And you know, and yet when I went through some difficult times, I knew where I could get some help. I knew that God was true. And I think here he is now, desperate. And Jesus now comes up. He follows, and a multitude followed him. They thronged him. Now get that word throng. That's kind of like they pressed him in. There's like a crowd here. And now they're leaving the shore where a great multitude gathered, and trying to go up the narrow pathways. You can just imagine how they're just jamming in. Everybody wants to be with Jesus. Now, a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years. You got a 12-year-old daughter at death's door. For 12 years, this man has enjoyed this little one. And now he's about to lose her. And now for 12 years, this woman's been in pain and suffering. For 12 years, this flow of blood, don't know what it is, probably some uterine thing that, you know, her menstrual cycle just never cycled off or something. We don't know what it was. But she had suffered many things from many physicians. And she spent all that she had was no better, but rather grew worse. Now, I love physicians. I really do. I appreciate doctors amazingly. Medicine, modern medicine, has taken us so far. But listen, there's always only so much they can do. At any given time and point in time, there's a whole list of things that we're able to be healed now because of modern medicine, but there's a whole list of things that still they can just look at you and say, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. We do not have any solution for this. And they send you home with no hope. Or worse, they keep experimenting on you and trying this and that, and they really don't know what they're doing. In this woman's case, that's exactly what went on. But when she heard about Jesus, now where did she hear? Who knows? She see, she heard that he did this or that. She heard some marvelous things. She's thinking out of her desperation, he can help. And she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. You know, interesting to me, you know, she's got a dilemma. Being a woman that has a flow of blood, it's more than just the pain and suffering. It's more than the fact that the doctors have been experimenting on her and she's gotten worse. More than the fact that she's lost everything she has now. She has no more money. But there was also, according to the Talmud, if a woman had a flow of blood that went beyond her menstrual period, that she was declared immoral. There's some immorality in her, which is the cause of it. So this ailment was not just a painful experience that made her poor. It was also stigmatized with this, oh, you're immoral. She walks down the street, people whisper, and the shame she had to endure. And being stigmatized, that may be one of the reasons why she didn't just go publicly to address Jesus, please, can you help me? Instead, she covertly sneaks in, presses through the crowd to touch his clothes, thinking that if she just touches his clothes, she'll be made well. Matthew tells us the hem of the garment. Maybe not much there to think about, but there is one interesting Levitical law that says to the Jewish man, every Jewish man had to wear a scarlet thread through the hem of his garment. It was almost signifying, look, you're separated unto God. Well, the Pharisees like to make their hems broad and big. You know, if a little scarlet identifies me, I want everybody to know I'm God's, you know, kind of a showy religion. I'm sure Jesus followed this tradition, but not to the extent of the Pharisees. But in her mind, the hem of the garment represents who he is as a person and his authority. In fact, you know, when you go into Isaiah, and you see in Isaiah 6, the vision of Isaiah as he enters into heaven and he sees the throne and God on the throne and the cherubim around. And the Bible says that the train of his robe filled the temple. The train of his robe, that would have been the... When you see a person's garment and then you see a king's long train, again, it's carried over from the same thing. That's a symbol of the authority. That long edge of the garment. And God's hem of his garment, if you will, his authority fills the temple, fills the heavens. God is in authority. He's on the throne. And I really believe that in a way that this is a picture. By the way, when Saul's garment was cut off, the little piece, remember, by David, when he found him in the cave? If you're familiar with the story, David all of a sudden finds his enemy Saul, who's trying to kill him, in the cave where he's hiding. And he could have taken his life. And Saul took a nap, and he came over, and he cut a little bit of his garment off. And I believe he cut a little of the hem off. Later, his conscience bothered him about doing that. I mean, he was good that he didn't kill him, but then he felt bad that he signified, look, your authority is no more. And then he was convicted, and the Lord had to... I think the Lord had to raise David up in his time. David shouldn't have taken matters into his own hands here. But the point is, it's all about this picture of the garment. So in her mind, all of these things, if I just touch his hem. Interesting that she's been so stigmatized that she feels she has to come in covertly. I wonder, I really wonder sometimes about our religiosity. You know how it is, you know, you start with nothing. You don't know what you're doing. I mean, look, I was the most non-churched guy I knew. I grew up in the church, but I walked so far away. I didn't know how to act around church. I didn't know how to be a church person. I didn't know how to dress for church. I still don't know how to dress for church. But, I always just felt, you know what, look, God looks at the heart. And so I always felt uncomfortable among church people with their nice ways and their churchianity speech. And they had all those lingo, that lingo, the biblical lingo I didn't understand. And, you know, at first, you know, that kept me away from the things of God for so long. I had to press through all that junk to get to Jesus. And, you know, the interesting thing is I see this woman in many ways stigmatized so by the religious community. There are so many hindrances to come to God, and sadly, one of the most profound are religious people. Makes me wonder, Lord, help us not be that kind of people. Because I know, listen, I know every time you actually, the fact you're here, you're sitting here, it wasn't just easy to get here. There was a battle, and some of you just visiting, you know, perhaps you had all these things happen before you even got here. And then you get here, and they make you park down in another county. And then you finally get up here, and you're coming in late, and then some usher says, oh, I'm sorry, you're too late to go in now. And I mean, it's like you get, look, I know how it is when you have a crowd like this, and you have to follow some procedures and policies, but maybe one of those procedures or policies just smacked you in the face, and you're like, that's all I need now. It's just one more block. You know, you got lost on the way here. You can't find it. You got no sign out there. You can't see it. You drive past it 3 or 4 times. I mean, I know. I try to imagine what it's like. And we were just talking this week with some elders about one, you know, unfortunate couple who came in halfway during the service was over, and when they started to come in the doors, you know, one of the ushers, oh, no, don't go in now, it's too late, and you can sit in the foyer, and, well, that was just enough to send the person into, this is crazy, I don't need this. And who knows what they went through to get there? Who knows how many times they went up and down the street before they found it, or what happened on the way? And, you know, look, I know every one of us have a story, and I think of this woman who has to deal with the religious community to try to get some help. So she's coming secretly. She's got this faith that if she just touches his clothes, she'll be made well. But immediately notice, verse 29, the fountain of her blood was dried up. So it worked. And she felt in her body she was healed of the affliction. In other words, the word there, the Greek actually, not felt, but she knew by experience, she knew something happened. And she was healed. Well, here's where the story takes on a whole new dimension. And in this next passage, you find Jesus now at work to do something that might be offensive to some. You see, there is nothing offensive about what he does really when you know what his heart is and what his plan is and what his intent is. And what God needs to do to take a faith that's imperfect and perfect it. Not just for the woman, but listen, there is a man who knows his daughter is at the brink of death, who's in a hurry, and he's probably run down to get Jesus, and they're going up speedily, and now this situation happens, a delay. Verse 30, Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" Well, his disciples said to him, "You see the multitude pressing up against you, thronging you." I like that word, thronging. "You say, who touched me?" And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. So he's ogling everybody. You know, he's looking for the one. As if the word of knowledge and wisdom working through him can know exactly. And the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. You know what hits me about this is that Jesus calling her out is kind of a strange kindness. The fact is multitudes are thronging him. They've got faith that they might see something. They might, hey, let's hang out with Jesus. We'll see something really cool. You know, and there's a lot of people that are just on the surface of Christianity that they get something out of it. You know, maybe they're happy to bring their family and they feel like they're good church people and they come, but they don't have a vital connection with the Lord. It can happen. We can lose God in the midst of church. We can miss Him. And the Lord, He's got to do something to get our attention. And in this case, you know, He's not going to let this woman carve out for herself a safe approach and leave it at that. He wants to do something much more profound in her. His mercy is at work here. You know, here Jesus is certainly a miracle, wonder-working person that's drawing a crowd. And you know, listen, it's not hard to draw a crowd. You throw a few miracles around here or there if that's what your goal is. But Jesus is not interested in the crowd. He knew what was in the crowd. He knew their commitment level was second to nothing. And he also knew that he wants to do something deeper. You know, there are plenty of, charlatans who take advantage of people's superstitious ideas about God, and at this point she has a superstitious faith. If I just touch the hem of his garment, I'll be okay. But she doesn't know at this point that it's not the hem of the garment that has saved her. It's not her touch of the finger that's saved her. The Lord is going to tell her in verse 34, he says to her daughter, by the way, the only time in the Bible Jesus ever addresses anybody with this word, daughter, your faith has made you well. It's not the touch of the finger. It's not the hem of the garment. It's your faith. You believed. And the Bible is very plain on that. What the Bible says, all who come to Jesus would be healed. And she came. Howbeit imperfectly she came, and now she's healed, but now he wants to do a deeper healing. See, healing, getting healed physically is all well and good. But it's a different kind of faith that will touch your very soul, cause you to be a disciple, cause you to want to just put it in perspective. All of life means nothing except for following Jesus. That's what true discipleship is. And look, there's too many charlatans out there taking advantage of people's superstition about this or that. And listen, I don't know if you've received some of these letters from these evangelists and these so-called healers. You know, really, just lying, deceptive words, many of them. Appealing to people's desperation. And some of these guys, you know, have reported literally millions and millions of dollars in income off of the superstitions of people. In other words, you know, look, you know, if you just come to my meeting and you express faith, you know, God, that faith in God, in my gift will heal you. And of course, how do you express that faith? Write a check out to my ministry. A very convenient way. And then if it doesn't work, well, obviously you didn't write a big enough check. Or you didn't commit yourself enough. You didn't express enough faith. So what they do is they get people, you know, instead of just giving that much, which was a little sacrifice, max out your credit cards. And then send in the money, and then God will answer you because now you're expressing faith. Now listen, a lot of people, believe it or not, you'd be amazed how many people get sucked up into these things. More so in countries that they can ill afford anything. You know, in Africa, some of these guys go over there and they get, you know, you put on a big show and you can get hundreds of thousands of people. And, you know, if you can get squeezed $10 or $15 out of their hard-earned money, which is probably half of their month's income, you know, for your business, you can make a lot of money. And sadly, this is the religious money-making business. Heartbreaking that such lying false prophets do these things. And yet, they prey on people's superstition. You see, listen, she doesn't know at this point. It wasn't the hem. It was the knowledge that God had of her and his love for her that touched her. Her believing was just the catalyst to that. But the object of it wasn't the hem. It was who he was. You know, she attaches a whole lot of importance on the externals as a means of grace. The hem, the touch of the finger are observed more than the faith. And there are many poor souls, sadly, that cling to some form of religion. You know, they grab onto the crucifix, or they'll, you know, hold onto those beads, or they'll light a candle, and the flicker of the flame, and the incense smell, and the cathedral look, and all of those things appealing, what? To our physical senses, sadly, are all really, in many ways, a superstitious, magical, superstitious thing rather than true connection with God. And Jesus wants to correct that. If he lets this woman go home, healed, her understanding is just that if you just touch his clothes, that's her testimony. It's the clothes, the magical clothes. And if he dies on the cross, let's collect those clothes. Let's spread those clothes out in a church and have people come and touch those clothes. And, you know, look, this is what people are doing to this day. The Shroud of Turin is like a huge market. You don't even know the millions of dollars that thing generates every year. But again, it just is amazing to me what people will trust. Jesus wants to correct that. Your faith has made you well. But here's the interesting thing. He wouldn't just let her go, and he is forcing the issue. And what does it say here? It says that she came trembling, fearing. Now, what is she afraid of? Is it possible that now she feels convicted, I stole something, and now I'm going to probably get cursed for it, and my condition will be worse than it was in the past? I mean, she's terrified. But she comes down and falls down at his feet, and notice, she just spills her guts. She tells him the whole truth. Now, here's the thing. You know, she's embarrassed. She's ashamed. Now she's being pulled into the public. It feels like a cruel thing to do to her. But listen, just like a plant, growing in some dark corner will scarcely grow enough to produce fruit. So your faith is only vibrant when it is visible. And the Lord must needs bring her out in the public, the confessed truth of her condition. Imagine, she has to confess. She probably tells her story. Look, I've been struggling with this thing for 12 years. I'm unclean, and I know I shouldn't have touched you, and that's why I only touched your clothes, but she's spilling her guts here. And then, of course, tells about her suffering and all that she experienced, and then the futile attempts to be cured. I went to doctors. I've spent everything. Her hopes of being freed from this thing, her fears of, you know, perhaps now she'll get a curse because she stole the blessing. While she's telling her little story here, because that's all Mark says, she told the whole truth. Every second that passes, there's another man standing there dying because his 12-year-old daughter is at death's door. I can only picture what that's like. Now, this to me is a picture of the Lord dealing with different groups of people. He has different things He needs to do with different people. This one man must needs wait patiently while this woman babbles on. And this woman must needs be public where she wanted to be secret, because it's needful that her faith come out in the open. It's amazing. Every person has some different thing. Some very fine religious ones among you really need to stop trusting in your religion, because you are. You're trusting in how good you are. You come into the church here thinking, you know, I've been pretty good this week. I think God owes me a blessing now. You know how subtle that is? How it can happen to a lot of us. Even as a pastor, you know, Lord, I've really been praying this week. Oh, Lord, just anoint the message, please. You know, I've done my best, you know, and as if it's about me. See, that's where we trip up sometimes, us religious people. We stumble over ourselves. But then there are others of you, you know, look, you were very doubtful whether you're even going to make it this morning. Your week was not good. You didn't want to feel like a hypocrite. You dragged yourself in here, and you'd just as soon hide in a corner somewhere and not really have anybody talk to you, because you might just have to open up about something that you've struggled with, and you'd rather just keep that quiet. And the Lord is saying to you, no, you know what? You need to be drawn in. He has a great love for you to be free completely. See, both of us have our own interests in mind. You know, when we give in to sin, we rebel, we go our own way. We want to be in control of our lives. We don't want to be under His rulership. But listen, all the nice, fine religious people are in the same boat. They just think that by being a goody-good and doing everything right, they can control God now to get Him to work for them. The same mistake. So we need to be patient to realize it's not about us. Lord, God is going to do His work in His time and His way. No matter how desperate we are, we must quiet ourselves and trust. And over here, no matter how desperate we are, embarrassed we are, maybe from our past, our being ostracized, outcast, the Lord wants us to come forward, be honest with who we are. We need that. And so the Lord knew it already. For us, it's really about stepping out. And I think that's, despite her imperfect faith, the Lord heals her. And despite this man and where he has been in his religion, the Lord's going to answer him. And this is the amazing thing. Here is both sides of the imperfect faith problem. But here's the merciful God that we serve. I'll tell you, when I read this passage, I'm so blessed to be following Jesus. I can't think of anybody else that would even move my soul to the degree that Jesus does. The more I get to know Him, the more I'm like, yes, I want to trust Him even more. Because this is who He's like. This is our Lord. This is what He is. Now, while He was still speaking, it's going to get even tougher. While He was still speaking. Now, for her, she's got the great word. You know, go in peace, your faith has made you well, daughter. And I mean, just, you know what? Now she's got a testimony. She's come out. She's opened her heart up. And you know what? There's nothing like that when a person finally gets plugged into a small group. They open up their heart. This is who I am, guys. This is who I am, girls. This is who I am. I need your help and prayer and encouragement. I need the Lord to move on my life. And you know, there's something very amazing when you get down to that confession and honesty of who you are before God, His work, there's a deeper work that goes on. Listen, you're going to get something just by coming and hearing the Word of God. But there's more. And I think this is what this woman was learning. But while he was still speaking, notice, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, now he's still talking to the lady. And they're coming, they're not talking, you know, they, Jairus, come here. And they get his attention. Your daughter's dead. How sensitive is that? Your daughter's dead. Why trouble the teacher anymore? There's a little bit of a difficulty with the word, why trouble the teacher? The word trouble is there in the Greek, but the context and the way the word is used is questionable. It could very well mean what they're saying is that don't trouble yourself with this guy anymore. In other words, we know it was a real difficult thing for you to come and humble yourself before this guy who you and I both know we really don't trust. And we're really embarrassed that you're here, but don't trouble yourself with him anymore. Your daughter's dead. It's not so much, you know, out of respect, don't trouble the teacher, you know, don't bother him anymore, it's too late. It's like, don't trouble yourself. In either case, the idea here is that that word dead, listen, there's something about hearing that word dead, and you probably heard that word if you're in your 30s or 40s, somewhere along the line for a parent or a friend or somebody in your life. That word dead is final. It's a very powerful word. It's emotionally charged. You hear that and it just, there's no more hope now. You hear the word, it's done, it's over. When I heard news of my father dying, it was like, it's over then. It's final. It's done. It's a final word. Now picture the finality of that word that's reverberating in his heart. Now you'd picture the first response he would have is just collapsing on the floor. He's done all that he can, and this woman just kept talking. And why did he even stop, Jesus? And my daughter was desperate, I told you that. And you were coming quickly, and then you stopped. And listen, this would have been all of these things, I'm sure, in his mind, but Jesus, it says, as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken. Now, there's another little Greek little play here, which is kind of fun, that you don't pick readily up in the English. The word for heard the word, in some of the translations, it's Jesus overheard. It's not the way we would use the word. The word that is actually being expressed here is he hears, but he neglects to hear. He hears, but he's chosen not to hear. In other words, he hears it, but he refuses to regard it. That's what the word is saying. And he said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not be afraid, only believe. As soon as he hears that, he doesn't hear it, and he says, don't be afraid, only believe. He jumps right on it. He anticipates the emotion of this ruler, just the finality of the word death, just losing it, and he preempts that. Jumps right on that. Don't be afraid, only believe. It's a very powerful thing happening here. This woman has been tested to the core of her being by coming up publicly, and this man's being tested to the core of his being by the finality of the word death. I can't imagine what it's like to lose a child. I know some of you that have. Never goes away. Never goes away. It's something, or even a spouse, it's there with you the rest of your life. There's a deepness there that only you know who have been through it. And yet the very person of Jesus preempting what would be the normal direction. Like you heard a few weeks ago, if you were here on a Wednesday night, a pastor from Minnesota share about his daughter's situation and how she was, you know, abused by a friend of his for over a number of years. And how he opened up his heart and shared that. It was pretty powerful. But see, I've met his daughter, and I'll tell you what an amazing thing. What you would think is this woman's going to be messed up and in therapy for the rest of her life. The Lord has so covered her and washed her and cleansed her and filled her. It's like you'd never know there was ever an issue. She's very outgoing, friendly, sweet young lady. I'm amazed at what Jesus does. He does all things well. But now he's preempting something that's so powerfully emotionally charged. Don't be afraid, only believe. And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. In the Talmud, if you are the poorest person in the community, you still by law were required to hire at least 2 professional mourners. Now, you can only imagine how many of them would have been here at this ruler's house. There's probably a whole, tumult is the word. Now, it would have been an odd thing for us. I mean, we're so used to a subdued, quiet, soft music, whispers in a funeral, quietness, I'm very sorry. You know, we're not used to this kind of thing, but I think their funerals were probably a little more honest. You know, there's just more of a depth of crying out. However, you know, to hire the professionals was kind of weird to me. Because you're going to see, you know they're professionals because, you'll see in a minute. He comes to the house, and when he came in, he said to them, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." It's like Jesus is almost annoyed with this funeral procession here. And, you know, these guys are out there wailing. And says, "The child is not dead, but sleeping." And it says, and they ridiculed him. They laughed him to scorn. That's how you can tell they were professionals. They go from weeping to laughing in a second. Real nice guys. But interesting, he's confronting the commotion. Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead but sleeping. Now some have misunderstood what Jesus is saying here to think that he's saying that the child is not really dead, but actually alive, just sleeping. This is not what Jesus is saying, and this is what you have to just kind of be a little bit familiar with the idioms and the culture. What he's saying is the child is dead, but because that's a euphemism, sleeping is a euphemism for dead, but it's not over yet. That's essentially what he's giving the impression. He's saying that, no, this is not done. This is not finished. The word death is final to you, but this is not that case. And of course, they're like, what are you talking about? We're professionals. We know the child is gone. There's no hope at this point. We've seen a corpse. We know what a dead body is. There's absolutely no hope here. What are you doing? And they're ridiculing him. But he put them all outside. Kicked them all out. Get out. Just get out of here. Get out of here. I don't know how he said it. I know how I would say it. I don't have time with you. Leave. He took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. Peter, James, and John, of course, I'm sure were either just outside or those with him were considered those who were with him. That is probably Peter, James, and John were right there because otherwise John Mark, who was probably got this from Peter, would not have a firsthand opinion about this. And so this is where he's given it. I remember reading Plato in college. It frustrated me. Reading this guy who's writing all these, he's making all these statements and then unqualified statements. And then instead of having them challenged, you know, which you would in a good dialogue, you get he's surrounded by a bunch of yes men. Oh, yes, good point. Oh, yes, I agree with you a whole part. Oh, yes. And it's just annoying reading it to me. So different from the Bible because everything Jesus does is challenged. Child's not dead but sleeping. Oh, you, and they ridicule him. You know, he heals somebody. Oh, it's on the Sabbath. He does anything he does. He's scrutinized. He's challenged. And you know what? I thank God for those enemies of Jesus. They perform for us a very wonderful service because we would never know. We would doubt. We would wonder, did that really happen? And how did that happen? And where's the challenge to that? And how can we know? Well, in every case, he's challenged so that we can see that people didn't just like, you know, turn their brains over to mush and just follow him. They were smart people scrutinizing, wondering, how can this be? And they represent us to think about these things. How can this be? So here, this is a weird thing. You know, they've been mourning. The child is dead, lying there. The parents saying, don't be afraid, only believe. And he took the child by the hand and said to her, Mark records, Talitha kumi, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. Now, this was written in Greek. And it was translated in English for us. This is our English version. But this word, he's actually saying, Jesus said, and he tells the Greek readers, the Aramaic, which was the common language of the day, And then he gives the translation in the Greek, which we have the English. Here, little girl, I say to you, arise. When they came from Babylon, they spoke in the Chaldean language, Aramaic. That was the language of every day. And Greek was also the language of every day because the world had become Greek. So you have the Aramaic speakers, you have the Greek speakers, and of course the Hebrew, they would have learned if they were Jewish, but it wasn't the common language of the people. So Mark goes out of his way to say, he says to her in Aramaic, Talitha kumi, which you wonder why he expresses it this way, and I believe it's because there is a correlation. You know, daughter, your faith has made you well. Little girl, the same root word, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. See, there was no doubt that she was dead. You know. And I think this is what happened. And so he commanded them strictly that no one should know it. Now, how do you hide that? I mean, the mourners were there. They get the word, but they're told to don't say what really happened. Maybe that was the purpose for him using the euphemism for she's only sleeping, because then when this happens, as far as they're concerned, wow, we did make a mistake. Oops. She was sleeping. Boy, we look silly. But it would have done this. Had this been spread abroad of raising from the dead, he's already got a crowd problem. They're already thronging about him to want to see something. But no, he knows where their heart is, and he's looking to make disciples. And that's why he's only speaking to them in parables at this point, because they can't really receive it. And he's got to force them to think. And you know, it's true even today. People need to think. People don't think things through. They don't think through their faith. They don't think through what they're doing, why they come to church, what the Bible is all about, what this means. They just kind of like, we get such in this mode where we really don't think things through. So I think that he's keeping it low because it would not suit the ministry that he's intended to have this thing spread abroad. And then he says that something should be given to her to eat. How about that? I love that. I mean, it's so practical. I mean, the little girl, she's been sick maybe a week, 2 weeks, hasn't eaten. Now she's perfectly healthy, and what's she going to notice first? Man, I'm starved. Jesus intuitively knows that. Give her something to eat. Oh, I love Jesus. So you have these two individuals. The Lord had to do different things with them, just like he has to do with us, to bring us into an awareness of who he is, where this desperate faith meets Jesus. And their intersection of the desperate faith, you know, between the woman and the man is just so artfully done. The one is just desperate. Let's move this thing. Come on, lady, shut up already. But he's got to just quiet himself. And she's got to, I'd just rather go home. I don't want to be even around here right now. And I'm forced to stand and say everything I did. And both were greatly needed. Oh, that the Lord would open our eyes to see more of Jesus, that we might, well, look, in many ways we need to respond in a similar way. What the Lord has done in our lives, like this woman, we need to speak it. We need to confess it. We need to bring it out for his glory. It also will be used for our benefit. You see, it'll be more real to her instead of going home thinking that I lit a candle and I did this and I did that and I, you know, this magical thing happens. Instead of that, she got the real heart of the Lord. And I really believe for this man who had to humble himself and be made to wait and show patience, he hung in there. He didn't lose it. He didn't say, enough with this already. You heard my child is dead. You delayed with this woman. I'm out of here. You know, it's like I see how hard that must have been for his religious heart. Because I deserve this. I'm a ruler of the synagogue. If you're going to heal all these other undeserving people, you better heal my situation. You know, no, he didn't go there. He was tempted, I'm sure. In as many cases, we are as well. But we got to come back to what it is all about. Jesus, in his grace, both undeserved, yet his mercy is there. Listen, the thing for me, if I'm this woman, the biggest thing I would fear is letting Jesus pass by without pressing through the crowd to touch him. Even with an imperfect faith, it's better than no faith. And maybe that's you. Maybe you need to press through the crowd and touch Jesus this morning. Maybe you need to say, Lord, I'm desperate. I've tried everything, and I think that there's so many ways I can relate with this. How many things I tried to bring peace to my life, and meaning and purpose, and it all came to nothing until I came to Jesus. And oh, how He touched me. And I believe He wants to touch some here this morning.